Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hi, I'm Preeti, and I'll be hosting today's program, in which we will be discussing the role of language as a marker of social difference in post-colonial countries. With me in the studio are our panel for today. From the Talking Eds team, we have Kainath Khurshid, Lidiane Castro, and Zainab Zaid. I welcome you all. So Zainab is from Nigeria, Lidiane is from Brazil, and Kainath is from Pakistan. We have a panel which is very diverse, as they come from three different continents and can contribute a lot towards today's discussion by providing a perspective from three different post-colonial nations. And as we are sitting here in Malta, which is also a post-colonial country, this whole concept of language becomes important in this context as well. Language is a means by which people experience themselves and the world. With the dominance of colonial languages, the existence and importance of local languages are threatened. The national languages are important for cultural survival. It is a foundation of people's cultural, geographical, and religious identity. Even in the field of adult education, language is an important instrument to provide vocational and professional trainings. So how can adult education address the question of politics of language? So Kainath, what do you think about the hierarchy which was created by the language, and how do you think it is relevant in your social context?
Language, it creates a hierarchy in a lot of post-colonial countries because the regional or local languages, they are subjugated, and the language of the colonizer becomes the medium of communication, becomes the medium of education, medium of legal proceedings and everything. So people who can speak the language of the colonizers, they automatically get to the top of the social hierarchy because they have the advantages which colonizers left us with. For instance, in Pakistan, only 8% or even less than 8% people can speak English language. But these are the people who have the top jobs. These are the people who are serving in the government. And these are the people who get more opportunities in life, basically. And as far as hierarchy is created by language go, our national language and one of our official languages is Urdu. And these languages, even Urdu is spoken only by 8% of the people. But then again, people who can speak Urdu, they have better chances and better opportunities in life than other people who speak different regional languages present in Pakistan.
Yes, and in some contexts, the language of the colonizers have threatened the local, regional and indigenous languages of the people. Only in few countries, people have been able to retain their own languages. For example, in India, they have thousands of languages, few official languages, and they still speak English, which provides them better opportunities in life compared to their own mother tongue. But for in country like Brazil, people speak Portuguese, and they have lost their own mother tongue or indigenous languages. What do you think about it, Lydie?
Yeah, what happened with our colonization was that at the beginning, we had a variety of languages from the indigenous people. It was around 1,200 languages. And when the Portuguese arrived in Brazil, there was some kind of mix so they could communicate between themselves, and the tribes could communicate as well. So they started a new language that had influence of Portuguese and came from the basis of the Tupi language. But what happened was when the Jesuit priests were expelled from the country, the language was forbidden and Portuguese was adopted as the only official language, and everything else couldn't be used anymore. Tribes were exterminated and they were forced to communicate as well. We had a lot of influence from African languages as well, but the slaves, they were separated, so they wouldn't keep their language. They wouldn't be able to communicate among themselves, and their language would die and they would have to learn the Portuguese language. So it was so strong that nowadays we have still some influence of words that came from African languages and indigenous ones, but we are not even aware that the origin of the words was that. So what happened is that nowadays, regarding indigenous tribes, for example, we have only around 108 languages, and they are dead or they are dying. So we lost more than 90% of the languages we had, and no one has access to that. No one studies, so they are all dying. As people die, sometimes we have a language that only one person can speak, so it's considered to be dead already because there is no one that person can talk to.
And language is also related to your geographical, cultural, and religious identity. You perceive the world in a different way from one particular language. And when we switch languages, we see a different view of the world. Zaina, what do you think? How does language is a marker of social difference in Africa and particularly in Nigeria? And do you think that with the coming of new post-colonial languages, we are forgetting our own cultural identities which are associated with language?
I think we also suffer from the same disadvantages as most post-colonial countries do. But on the other hand, prior to the coming of the colonial masters, especially in northern Nigeria, because actually Nigeria used to be what we call, it was ruled according to what they call the protectorate. So we had the northern protectorate, we had the southern protectorate, we had three protectorates. So because the north and south are quite distinct in terms of language, in terms of culture, even though we are Africans, but we are very distinct. And we already had contact with the Arabs before the British came. So since around the 9th century, so we were very versed in Arabic, you know, writing, reading, writing. Basically, our mode of life was even, you know, modeled according to the Arabic, or more, I should say, the Islamic values that the Arabs carried with them. So we had everything in place before the colonial masters came. But the first thing they did when they came was to try to root out Arabic, because we had a very organized system of government as well. We had even an organized system of taxation and everything. That's why when the British came, they couldn't rule the northern part of Nigeria through direct rule. They had to go through what they call the indirect rule, because we had all the structures in place. We have what we call like the governors. Everything was there, even the tax down to collecting tax. We had the system. So they had to use the chiefs that were there, the posts that were already created, to rule us using what they call the indirect rule. So at that time, Arabic was even the official state religion. We have archives that we have kept in libraries that you can see exchange between different, what we call the emirs, who are like the governors in different parts of northern Nigeria. You could see exchange of letters between one emir and another emir in Arabic. We had that. We even went to the extent we developed our own language using the Arabic scripts, you know, so we had everything flourishing. So when the British came, they automatically removed Arabic from the system and they introduced English. The first impact that the people felt was when the colonial masters came, they used those people who could read and write in Arabic to run their administration. But suddenly they decide to turn it all the way around. So a lot of people lost their jobs. They couldn't, because when you cannot read and write in English, that means you are not useful to them anymore. So people lost their jobs. Initially, they were paid under the British system. People lost their livelihoods. They couldn't work anymore. And this actually went on for centuries to create what we have, the disparity in education between the North and the South till today. That system is still in place because we in the North, we are very proud of our identities as Muslims. And Islam is a religion very much tied to Arabic, because the religion of Islam, our primary texts that we use, primary sources of Islam, were revealed in Arabic. The Quran is revealed in Arabic. So we have a very strong feeling of, you know, proud identity when it comes to Arabic. So a lot of people refuse at that time to put their kids in school to learn English, because English, the colonial masters worked hand in hand with the missionaries most of the time. Most of the time, English was taught using the Bible. So people were not really happy with that and they viewed it with a lot of suspicion. So people didn't want to enroll their kids in the schools that the colonial masters created, which we call the Western education type of schools. So that created a lot of disparity in education. Some people send their kids, some refuse to send their kids. Till today, even though we realize the value of learning Western education, still a lot of people are still not happy with that. So I can say that this difference in language, what the English language has created, it has created, the North has become very, very backward in terms of Western education. And prior to coming of the colonial masters, when you compare the North and the South, we were actually literate. They didn't have anything when it comes to literacy. They couldn't read and write. The first contact they had with reading and writing was with the colonial masters, while we had our own system, you know, flourishing. So actually they put a halt on our educational development because we were stripped of what we had and our people did not accept what they brought, you know, completely. So people were left at a blank space, you know, even though people are trying to catch up, but it's a long time. So it's been really difficult for people to really catch up. So I could say that the first thing is the rooting out of the Arabic language, which was our own main system of running the administration. Our people spoke Arabic. Everybody spoke Arabic. But now that's gone. Then the second thing is that, you know, now it's like the only language that is recognized is English, though it has a positive side. Nigeria has about 500 languages. So if you want to choose an official language, it will be a problem. So we see the good side of the English language as well. It has united us in a way. But at the same time, it has made our local languages very, very subjective to the point that some people are not being happy to be identified with their local language. They would prefer you to identify them with the English language than with their own mother tongue or their own indigenous languages.
Zainab, this is such an interesting thing to notice because I come from a continent which is thousands of miles away from yours, but the experience we had is so much similar because when British came to India or Pakistan, which was called subcontinent in that point of time, we used to speak Persian and it was the language of education and the language of administration. And around mid-1800s, Persian was slowly and gradually abolished and English was introduced as the language of administration. And that brings me back to what Preeti was previously saying about the change in the worldview with the change in the language we speak. When we were speaking Persian, we were more close to Central Asia, Asia, mm-hmm. and the Islamic or Muslim roots we have because, and a lot of cultural values like poetry and yes. literature was written in Persian and it was very deep and rich and it was something which we could relate to. But stripping away of the language has stripped us away from our own culture, our own heritage. We are not any more proud of the inventions which were made by Central Asian Muslim scholars. We are not any more proud of the poetry which came out from that particular era. Now we are kind of at a loss at what our identity is because stripping away of Persian gave us English, but English was only accessible by only a very small percentage of people who could afford to go to English medium schools and universities later on in life. So it created that social difference and a change in the worldview. So people who speak English as well as their local languages, they have a completely different view of how they see the world works, whereas people who only speak their own languages, they have a completely different view. They feel dominated, they feel subjugated, and they feel that they are being left out because they don't have the same chances in life, they don't have the same opportunities in life. Because for a person, for instance, in Pakistan, if they need to go abroad for higher education, then they need to pass a certain standardized English test being administered by British universities. But those people who have been speaking that language since childhood, they have a higher chance of scoring good grades in those standardized tests, whereas people who learn English later in life, sometimes they get good grades if they pay a lot of money for tuition, but sometimes they don't because they can't afford to acquire the language the same way. So it's such an interesting point of view that you brought about. And I think a lot of colonized countries, I think they go through the same experience. They go through the experience of feeling the social difference which gets created because of the different languages we speak.
Yes. When we talk about that, in relation to Brazil, for example, we had all these languages. And nowadays we have like 10,000 words that come from Tupi, for example, but we don't know the meaning of these words. We have like the most famous place, Ipanema, that it's known everywhere in the world from the song. And we don't even know the meaning because we don't get to study anything related to those cultures. They were just erased by the colonizer. So we don't get to know about Africa. We don't get to know about indigenous history. and their language, their costumes, everything was subjugated. And we don't know our own history. We don't know our own language because our language is not the same as the one from Portugal. They had this unifying the languages. Some changes were made so it would be closer, the one from Portugal and the one from Brazil. But it can't be because the words we have there, the words that came from this heritage, Africa, indigenous, they don't exist in Portugal. They don't have that mix that we have. And regarding education and not being able to learn about all this, we also have the problem about English because English is the universal language. And in Brazil, as in Pakistan, not many people can speak it. Actually, just 5% of Brazilians can speak English. And if we talk about being fluent, it's close to 1%. So that makes a huge difference. It marks the ones that have more access to knowledge, the ones that have more power, more capital power. They can do that. They can afford to have classes.
Okay, now at this stage, we can take the opportunity to pause for a few moments and gather our thoughts, and we will be back with you soon. Welcome back. So as the point which Liddy mentioned earlier, that the language and the class are related to each other, people from higher classes have higher chances of affording an international language course instead of people who come from lower strata of society. That's how the concept of language is directly related to adult education, because living in a postmodern, post-colonized, post-globalized world, we all accept that, you know, English and some other languages are recently becoming the international languages or the languages of the profession. So if you want to work or if you want to survive in the professional conditions, you need to know the international languages. But how should adult education, the field of adult education, address this issue? Like, should we have vocational, professional and literacy trainings in local languages, or should we have in international languages? If it is in local or national languages, is it still relevant to people? If we're teaching them in their own language, they might find a platform within their area, but what if they want to experience the globalized world? What if they want to get out of their own countries, you know, and live the experience? Then they can always question the whole system of language in which they have been taught.
I think for me, I believe adult education definitely has an important role to play. Especially like in Nigeria, we have the non-formal education system where you can have programs that will cater for specific needs of people in the society, where you can have programs specifically addressing language for people who are interested. For me, I just believe when it comes to education, there shouldn't be one criteria or one standard, for example, the English language. There should be many opportunities for people to choose what is useful for them. You get my point? Because when you only have one system flourishing, that means indirectly you are setting that system as the only standard and also as the only option. So I believe adult education should have programs in terms of language training, especially because one thing I find very interesting is how language, it's not that we just learn English language just for the sake of communication. It comes with the culture of the English people or the Western world, which if we carry that culture along, then we are always putting our cultures at an inferiority level. you know, we are just keep on supporting the status quo. So we have to give people, we have to recognize our languages are very important to us. We have to give chance in terms of maybe the academic field, be it formal, informal, for people to have platforms that they can learn. And also libraries also have a very important role to play here. We have to have books in the libraries about our histories. Most of the histories we have usually are written from the colonial masters or colonial perspectives. We have to have people that will currently sit down and write our own, rewrite, I should say, our own histories in our own languages. That's how we will learn. We are not trying to say that people should stop learning English. I believe it's too late. English has become English has become a world language. Now you have to learn it if you want to survive. Mm-hmm. But all I'm saying is that people should have options. You should learn English and you should learn other languages as well. Definitely.
Yeah. I agree with you on a lot of points you just mentioned, that the very fact that the four of us are sitting here conversing in the language which is not our own, because it gives us a lot of opportunity. We have the language, we have the tools, so we can actually go back home and tell the people, yes, that although this language gives you certain opportunities, but that doesn't mean that you can disregard your own language, your own culture, and everything which comes with your own language. And I think because we have this opportunity, we can profess and we can advocate for our own languages and other languages all around the world, that they should be given equal opportunity to be included in curriculums all over the world. And not on a global context, because I think that would be a utopian thing to think about, but even at like local context, even in, within the country, like local languages, they should be given equal opportunities to become part of education and administrative systems.
Yeah, I think that not only about language, but the dialects, because we have in Brazil, for example, many dialects, but we would have as the official ones, the ones that are considered to be correct, the ones that come from Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo, because they are the cities that are the powerful cities, where the capital is, where the companies are, where the money is. So all the dialects from other regions, like the northeast of Brazil, when you listen to someone and it's very different, the accent, the words, everything, and you can notice really quickly that they come from that region. And there are a lot of prejudice regarding that, because they are seen like poor people. There is this stereotype, this stigma that comes with it. So depending on how you are going to talk, how you're going to pronounce, prejudice will come in. And I think that it's not something that it's really addressed in the classroom, and it's something important, because we need to learn to accept and celebrate our difference. And the one from Rio shouldn't be the official we have, since we have this variety. And it's something that we see on the media and how we are taught every day. So we also need to think about not only how to make our language something that we value, but also the differences inside the language. So that's also another point that should be considered by adult educators. It should be addressed, because we will find this variety in classrooms many times, and also how people from different social classes, how they speak, and they are made to feel like they are less, that they are speaking wrong. But no, if the language is not a dead language, it will keep changing, and educators should be aware of that instead of trying to correct and make them feel like what they are bringing is the wrong, because it's not the not following the norms. We should also adapt and be more flexible to that.
I think I agree with what my lady is saying, but I think the first issue that we need to address, if we are supposed to accept our differences in terms of how we use the English language or how we master the English language, I think the first thing is to go back to our identities. If we actually are proud of ourselves, of our languages, of our identity, then we will come to the understanding and accept that our languages, usually our mother tongues, usually interfere with the second language. Then that will make us accept people when they are not perfect in the second language that they are. So it actually comes from us. We have to start reviving our identities, you know, acknowledging, you know, these are our identities and we're happy about it, then we can accept ourselves if we make mistakes, and then we can accept other people if they are not masters, you know, of the language. Though some can conquer it, we all have accents in a way, so some can conquer, you know, the different problems they have, but some cannot, because language sometimes surely interferes when you speak a second language. But another important aspect is this, like in Nigeria now we have, like in the southern part of Nigeria, generally they've come up with their own kind of English, which is called Pidgin English. And it's recognized in Nigeria. They've about, I was reading a statistic yesterday, about 53% of Nigerians speak that English. So instead of laughing or be finding somebody funny when he speaks a language that is not originally his language, they've already created their own language around the English, the original English language. They speak it, they understand it, you know. It's very common in Nigeria, just like I think Criolla in the Caribbean as well. They've also managed to create something like that.
We also had Criolla language in Brazil.
Yeah, so instead of like stigmatizing people or making them, you know, the subject of humiliation or some sarcasm, you know, people have actually become creative and innovative and created their own kind of language using the platform of the English language.
I think we, being the adult educators, a lot of it falls on our shoulders. It's kind of our responsibility to bring this particular matter towards the discourse and discussion tables and policy formulation whenever it happens, that students from all over the world, when they go to international forums, they should be allowed to make mistakes. They should be allowed to bring their own language, bring their own vocabulary when they converse in a particular language, because it's not their language, and they shouldn't be made to feel ashamed of having a difference in the languages. And I think on part of policymakers, sometimes we try to disregard and radicalize the whole notion of having a national language or something like that, because we have to accept that the languages we have been given over the course of colonization, that they are a big part of our lives, and we can't debunk them. We can't just discard them, and we need to work with them. But at the same time, we need to bring our local languages and regional languages up to the same level so that everyone in the society has equal opportunities.
I'm afraid that we'll have to leave our discussion for now. We have established today that language is an important marker of social difference. It is also related to our cultural, social, geographical, religious identities, and to make our identities more prominent, or if we want our languages, local languages, to survive, we need to recognize the importance of international languages, but we still have to give importance and prominence to our local languages. We do understand the prominence of international languages in post-modern world, but being adult educators, we need to recognize that the struggle for the survival of languages is only successful if it comes from within. I thank all my panelists today, Kainat Khurshid, Lidiane Castro, and Zainab Saeed, for their valuable time today. Also, I thank our technician, Samuel. The Talking Ed series is available online at maltauniversitybroadcasting.com. All that remains for me is to say thank you for listening and goodbye.